Tonight on Arena, on what would have been his 80th birthday, we celebrate John Lennon and new albums from Future Islands, Emmy the Great and Travis up for review. Five one double 51 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. Today would have been the 80th birthday of John Lennon, and it's both incredible and poignant to think that but for the intervention of fate and Mark David Chapman, that the Beatle might still have been amongst us today, like his peers, Paul McCartney, Bob Dylan, Brian Wilson and other songwriters from the 1960s who helped to shape that extraordinary decade. Celebrations are taking place in the United Kingdom and across America for the 80th birthday. We thought we'd also mark the moment here on Arena. In a moment, I'll be speaking with writer Philip Norman, whose book back catalogue includes the iconic Beatles book Shout, and a later biography, John Lennon, The Life. But first of all, let's hear from Lennon himself. Nobody Told Me, one of the final offerings that we got from John Lennon, a track recorded in 1980, the year, of course, towards the end of that year in December, he was shot dead, unfortunately, and we heard very little, obviously. Well, we heard no more after that, apart from certain albums that of material that's been recorded. And Philip Norman, his biographer, joins me on the line this evening on what would have been his 80th birthday. It is incredible to think, Philip, isn't it, what he might be doing and how he might have been amongst us today, and how, what sort of celebrations there would have been if he were alive.
Yeah, I mean, it's because, well, at the age of 40, which seems such a very terribly young age to have been extinguished like that, he thought that he was sort of heading for old age then, you know, that he and Yoko would be like a couple, like Darby and Joan, because John was very insecure and never really thought that he'd made it, and there was never really satisfied with anything he did, and thought, you know, the age of 40, that was a sort of, you know, one of the final milestones.
And in that song that we just heard, you know, Nobody Told Me There'd Be Days Like This, you get the sense that, because obviously there's a lot of material that we talk about in terms of the difficulties he had as a kid and the difficulties that came along in later life as well, but you get a sense of a man who's in a good place when he's singing Nobody Told Me There'd Be Days Like This.
Yes, he did seem to have found a measure of calm and repose after a long decade in America. We had to spend a lot of time fighting to stay in America and couldn't go outside of America because of one little tiny drug conviction back in London. But in 75, he and Yoko had a son. And from then until his death, it seemed to be a much more stable sort of John, and sort of just, you know, because he was such a massive insecurities always. Even then, he was saying to Yoko late at night, "Oh, why do they do more cover versions of Paul's songs than they do of my songs?" You know, he never really relaxed, but he seemed to have, I don't know, there was something calm about his music, I think, by then. Even that, you know, that humorous thing you just played, it's kind of slightly wry and humorous. It's not a real complaint.
As you said, inevitably there's a wry humour in there, I suppose. But you touch on this insecurity that was there. How much of that would you say, Philip, as you have written about his life, goes right back to the difficulties of those early years, the death of his mother, and subsequent difficulties in that early childhood?
I mean, we are born, you know, the way we're going to be, and that was in his sort of genes in any case, you know, insecurity. But his childhood was so very troubled. In one way, he was very spoiled because he had an aunt who indulged him. He lived with her, Aunt Mimi.
Yeah.
Bought him everything he wanted, including a guitar. But then he felt that he'd been abandoned by both his parents at different times. He hadn't really. Mimi just wanted to take him away from her sister, Julia, who was John's real mother, because Mimi didn't, she wanted a child, but she didn't want to have sex. And that was the best way to do it. His father was always sort of, you know, saddled with the accusation that he'd deserted John, but that was in the war when men, had, particularly from Liverpool, had to go to sea. The merchant navy was in. And he really wanted to keep the family together and didn't want John to go away from him, but it just happened.
You spoke there about Auntie Mimi, and in fact, you had access to papers that Auntie Mimi had that maybe give us an insight into who he was and how, and that relationship between the two of them, how important it was. What did you see there that particularly struck you as vital in how the Lennon that we know, the songwriter that we know, was formed?
Well, you know, in Britain in those days was riven by class, probably still is. And John was very much born into the sort of aspiring middle class. And his Aunt Mimi, a very excellent woman in every way, but she was a most terrible snob, and she didn't like him talking with a Liverpool accent. She said, that's a whacker accent, John, that's not your real accent. So when he became a Beatle and suddenly being Liverpudlian was so very chic, John had to sort of start talking with a Liverpudlian accent, and Mimi would say, what are you talking in that funny way for, John? So that was why he really, part of his rebellion was to call himself a working class hero. In fact, he wasn't really working class at all. It was a leafy middle class upbringing.
He could have adapted a Dublin accent at one point along the way, I suppose, as well. Grandfather Jack Lennon, a Dublin crooner, is that a fair description of Grandfather Jack?
His grandfather was supposed to have been in a minstrel troupe in the days when that was the medium for popular music in Britain and America. I actually did find trace the minstrel group that Jack Lennon had belonged to, but it was only a very sort of short time when he went to America. They played a lot in Dublin. There was a lot of interchange of this music across the Atlantic even then. But there's no sort of record of his. He was John Lennon. He was the first John Lennon. Mm. But that was as far as I could go, tracing the minstrel troupe.
What then about, you know, the insecurities that obviously were there with that very difficult childhood? There was also the death of a close friend, wasn't there, as well? Stu Sutcliffe, it was in there too. What about the meeting with Paul McCartney? Again, another man who had lost his mother in a very different way, obviously. But what about that meeting? How, you know, it's so difficult to kind of work out what that did for the Beatles. But what did it do for John Lennon, do you think?
Well, the great salvation for a lot of boys who were unhappy in the 50s, and I would include myself as well, was to discover this music, this you could make for yourself. Originally was skiffle music, then it was rock and roll. Mm. And boys who discovered that, they were in like a sort of an embattled minority because the adult world completely disapproved of it and hated it. And so you felt you were sort of part of an underground movement long before there was something called the underground. And that was what drew many boys of very different character together. And that's what drew John Lennon and Paul McCartney together. They were very, very different in many ways. But there was this absolute burning passion for the music that drew them together and turned them into this extraordinary partnership that these two should meet, these two natural sort of musical geniuses should meet like that at a church garden party. It was extraordinary.
To what extent do you think, if there was a rivalry, I mean, there must have been a difficult dynamic at times between them. We know that Lennon and McCartney is how the songs are so often credited, but one or other of them took the lead in different songs. Was it like a sibling rivalry or was it something else?
It was a creative rivalry, you see. They were, each one was trying to sort of outdo the other. But then, you know, the mythology is that John was the tough rock and roller and Paul was the sweet, melodious, middle of the roader. Paul could do rock and roll very, very well. And John was very romantic. So John could write a very sweet love song and Paul could be a rocker. But they just managed to sort of trade personalities. That was the thing, because if one of them couldn't finish a song, the other one would finish it for him. They were that close together. There was that kind of symbiosis. It was extraordinary.
It was Lennon who took the lead in A Day in the Life, though, was it?
Yes, but you see, now A Day in the life is like, it's like John Lennon's De Profundis. You know, it's from the depth of his soul, his insecurity, his desolation at his worst moments. But in the middle, there's this little cheerful bit by Paul, which he had lying in a drawer, got up, jump out of bed, drag the comb across, cheerful, perky little song in the middle. And that great track, that epic track, would not be as great as it is with that little bit by Paul in the middle.
I noticed I was late. Found my coat and grabbed my hat.
I have heard that song in a totally new way now, thanks to you, Philip Norman. I mean,
really?
I really have. You know, and that's as you say, that section in the middle. But you kind of hear a transition from that, you know, terribly sad song of a death by suicide into that little ditty. But we wouldn't have had that middle section and that big rising, that figure that brings the music almost exploding off into this little ditty. It was an extraordinary partnership.
The elements just worked perfectly. It is a masterpiece, and it's a single track, really.
Yeah, yeah. At 5 minutes and 29 seconds, you know, which in itself, I suppose, was challenging, or not. What's the word when somebody does something that is difficult to do against all the odds? I can't think of the word. It'll come to me in a minute. It's a very simple word, but it just won't come to my mind. Let's think about, you know, I mentioned to you, Philip Norman, obviously. With you as John Lennon's biographer, we're celebrating and remembering his what would have been his 80th birthday. Given the relationship that he had with the United States of America when he was there, you mentioned the drug charge from the past was a difficulty in terms of getting in and out of the United States, but he did have difficulties with Richard Nixon, it has to be said as well. Where do you think he would be in today's America?
It's very hard to say, because today's America has sort of exceeded any kind of fantasy that were ever in a film. You look at Netflix and all the films about presidents have, you know, the problem with the president, he has a girlfriend or something. You know, now it's beyond belief what the president is and has. Mm. I think John would always have kept his edge. I think they would have got back together, the four of them. They almost did, actually, not many people know, in the early 70s when John was supposedly so against any reunion. Mm. But somebody offered them so much money that John said, I'd stand on my head in a corner for that kind of money. And they were going to do it, but then it was fixing up the album and the film that went with it. Mm. It was impossible, so that withered. They never actually were said to have broken up. They did all sign papers, so they did break up. But the public thought they were still in abeyance for another 10 years. And the rumor was always coming along that they were going to go back together again. Of course, that became impossible.
Well, let's actually listen to it. Here's a conversation, John Lennon. I'm sure you've heard this before, with BBC's Bob Harris in 1975. And Harris, of course, comes to the question that you just mentioned. Let's listen to the interaction between Bob Harris, 1975, BBC, and John Lennon.
The inevitable question.
I mean, are they ever going to get back together?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, is there any possibility? But secondly, much more important, yeah. Do you think that it's a good idea?
Well, that's another point altogether, right. Whether it'd be a good idea or not. You see, it's strange, because at one period when they're asking me, I say, no, never, what the hell, go back, no, not me. And then there came to a period when I thought, well, why not? If we felt like making a record or doing something. Everybody always envisages the stage show. To me, if we were together at studio again, you know, the stage show is something else. If we got something to say in a studio, okay. Now, when I'm saying that, I turn the paper and Georgie say, not me, right? It's never got to a position where each one of us have wanted to do it at the same time. I think over the period of being apart, we've all thought, oh, that wouldn't be nice. That wouldn't be bad, you know. I mean, I've worked with Ringo. I've worked with Ringo and George. I haven't worked with Paul because we had a more difficult time, but now we're pretty close, you know. So, and the other question is, would it be worth it? You know, but that is answered by if we wanted to do it. If we wanted to do it, then it'd be worth it. If we got in a studio together and thought we turn each other on again, then it would be worth it, you know. Mm. And sod the critics, you know, I mean, you know, they've got nothing to do with it. You know, the music is the music. If we make a piece that we think was worthwhile, it goes out.
John Lennon speaking to the BBC's Bob Harrison, 1975. Philip Norman, Lennon's biographer, speaking with me this evening on what would have been John Lennon's 80th birthday. Or clearly he hadn't been offered the huge amount of money that you mentioned at that time, Philip Norman, when he made that interview.
Well, I think it was before that, actually.
Yeah?
But yes, but then when they all saw, I mean, bands that were not a sort of hundredth as good as the Beatles were getting, you know, by the 90s for reunions, single reunions. I mean, that would have, I'm sure, been impossible for them to resist. And they would have sort of got over their angst with each other, which wasn't that bad in the end, really. They never actually had a proper row. They just kind of groused each other at third parties. So I think, they would have come back, of course.
Brave was the very simple word I was searching for earlier on. Brave choices in terms of a 5 minute, 29 seconds long single. And they had longer singles than that too. Finally, Philip Norman, on this 80th birthday, which is both a great day and a sad day, clearly, because John Lennon isn't with us to celebrate that 80th birthday. What do you think his legacy is? How significant a figure is he in the 20th century and now?
Well, he left behind so very much. I mean, not only this amazing music with the Beatles and after. I mean, his solo album should not be forgotten. Mm. Even the one with Yoko, I think is rather wonderful, the agitprop one, sometime in New York City. But he left the mark also of a writer and an artist and a peace activist. And he left laughter. He was always wonderfully funny. And all those things together are really hard to forget. Nobody wants to. He's also become, he would be amazed to think of it, a sort of secular saint. He stands for hope and stands for peace. When he was alive, he was derided for that because peace activism was not something pop stars did very much in those days. Now he can be seen in, you know, for the peace activist that he was.
Well, listen, Philip, I'm sure it has been an incredibly busy day for you and must have been difficult in that respect, a poignancy, given that Shout, that biography, was released in or published in 1980. You know, before the shooting happened, obviously, and then subsequently your further biography after that. But thanks for being with us here on Arena this evening. That Philip Norman and a box set, Gimme Some Truth, The Ultimate Mix, is released today featuring the music of John Lennon. And BBC Four is all about Lennon this evening. The film Hard Day's Night will be there and the documentary Lennon, The New York Years. John Lennon would have been 80 today.